the Wise Men's Here podcast. We're in association with A Love Supreme, and I'm Stephen Goldsworth. Gareth Barker and our guests will be filling you in with the analysis from the Spurs game. I couldn't watch it, so I'll be asking questions on behalf of anyone else in that position. I've also got a cough that I can't control, so apologies if I have any sort of attack while trying to speak. The less I say, the better anyway. Gareth, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, thought so. What thought kind be more of enthusiastic about saying
what
that.
What kind of attack? Like a physical attack?
Just like a coughing attack, obviously.
Are you going to say something controversial? It'd be no. Like one of those Facebook things that you get now that says, ooh, somebody said something, and then you'll never believe what happened next, and it gets, you have to click on it, and then nothing that interesting happens. That's what's going to happen.
I don't know. I don't think I've ever tried that out. I don't think
I've
ever felt
I don't click
that.
Them either. Does anybody else aware of these Facebook things? Are you on Facebook, Chris?
How do you know nothing happens?
I think you've certainly been clicking on
them. Yeah, how do you know that nothing happens if you haven't clicked on
them? Well, because it's clickbait. We're all well versed in clickbait by now. Let's get into the 2015.
Yeah, our guest tonight, Chris Young from the Sunderland Echo, been freezing himself half to death watching the under-21s. All in the line of duty, Chris.
Yeah. Nil-nil in the mud and the snow. That's just what an afternoon's made of, isn't it?
Reminds of when I was a kid and we played West Ham the Cup, and Harry Redknapp said, "You always draw 0-0 in Sunderland and it's always freezing."
Very much.
You do it every week, though. Yeah. Another Chris, Weatherspoon, makes his return to the pod. He used to do stuff as well. Now he's just like an additional voice.
Thanks.
But a welcome one.
Well,
it sounds like it.
He was available.
Well, you're going to have to fill me in, lads, as I've said.
Again, physically.
Yeah, yeah. On the,
attack. Going down physically. To carry on.
Yeah.
Avenue here, isn't it?
But we're going to...
Sadomasochist Stephen Goldsmith.
We'll hear from Gus on the game before we get your opinion on it.
Yes, I think normally you need to be realistic, and sometimes the opposition can be better than you, and you got nothing, you know, to win the game, to play the game, or to understand the game. I think we had enough. I think for the first time we played this system, because of course of Jermaine, I think we adapted well. I think we were comfortable going forward. They got lucky by the deflected goal, which at that time it sounded, you know, a little bit bad for us, because it's not what you expect. You just, you know, if it's a good goal, you take it. But when they get lucky, that's what we didn't need. But we didn't change. It was a penalty action, which is not worthy to talk. The chance from Fletcher, which if you put Fletcher there 10 times, he would score 9. And for today was the 10th. And then the goal. So I think the first half performance being all new, it was quite positive. Then we needed a break. You know, then we needed to, of course, to defend, but at the same time to be a little bit brave. And in the situation that we were, I think we had the 2 or 3 chances at the end that normally you should put away, especially the rebound and the chance from Danny. You know, when you're away at Tottenham, I mean, they were very brave. They lost, you know, they left 2v2 at the back. They were not scared of coming, and it was difficult, but we were standing there. They have a few shots. But I saw the team always organized and, you know, only allow them to certain opportunities, but not clear-cut chances. You need to go the other way. That's why we changed the 2 strikers. I think it's the first time I changed 2 strikers for 2 strikers. And we nearly got the goal, you know. Disappointed with the goal, you know. In that minute of the game, away from home, the way we play, 1-1, you need to be a little bit more careful and not be exposed, you know, on a break.
The draw with Tottenham Hotspur at the Stadium of Light, Chris Young, was hectic. How was this one in comparison?
Certainly more equally equal, I think, because I thought Spurs at the Stadium of Light back in September were superb. Yeah. Arguably as good a team as I've seen all season. Dembele had one of his good 3 or 4 games of the season. I thought Sunderland did really well. Created a great chance with Fru Fletcher just before Larsson equalised. Second half, they were pinned back far more by Spurs, but Spurs didn't necessarily hurt them that much. They went sideways a lot, and there was a lot of shots from distance. And then Graham had the first of his 2 good chances, and then Sunderland got hit on the counter-attack cruelly right at the end.
What's your favourite thing about the game, Gareth, apart from Gus making me look like an idiot beforehand?
Yeah, that was
saying that
good.
He wouldn't play
well,
3 at the back.
I like the 3 at the back, so...
We all know that. Not quite the Christmas tree formation.
No, well, the thing is, if you had the 4 in, you probably wouldn't go with the Christmas tree because you want someone up alongside him. So if you've got 2 in behind the forward, then it's not going to really utilise Defoe's strengths maybe as much. So it's logical if you'd play with two up, if you'd like a traditional sort of 3-5-2 or 5-3-2, whichever way you want to say it. But I think the highlight of the game would have been if, like, after Fletcher missed that chance, he sort of revealed a shirt with like Altidore's face on it, and like that was like a dedication. Like, you know when someone scores and they like dedicate the goal to somebody, he could dedicate that miss. Like, that was for you, Josie.
It was very Josie Altidore,
channeling his inner door.
His foot just seemed to disappear.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, at least it didn't go behind him. I mean, it went in front. So that was a positive thing from that. I think generally it was a bit disappointing that Fletcher didn't really take his opportunity to be the partner for Defoe, and I wouldn't say Wickham did either. Immediately, obviously, they're going to need time and to settle down in that system, but it kind of points to the reason why maybe they haven't.
Did he not do enough
together.
Apart from the miss?
I mean, he created that chance for the back heel, but I just thought he didn't hold it. It was like weak.
No,
like the ball retention was crap from both
centre-forwards. There was one moment in the first half where Larson played a brilliant crossfield pass, and Fletcher got it on the left hand side of the area, and Defoe had overlapped him. He was just waiting for the perfectly weighted pass, and Fletcher overhit it, and that probably summed up his day.
Yeah, it didn't work, and then like Wickham came on and was just like, it looked like he did against Palace that time. He was just like crumbling, you know, under the slightest touch.
Wickham should be enthused. This is his chance to get back up front.
It's weird, isn't it? His best performances have come on the left, where everyone was crying out for him to be down the centre. But I think when you think back to Chelsea, he ran Ivanovic ragged. I thought he was good against Manchester City here at home against Sabaleta. But down the middle, it's just not clicked for him this season.
Chris Webspoon, happy with the formation?
To be honest, I did say beforehand it's what I'd like to see us go to eventually. After having been told by yourself that Gus wouldn't do it, I didn't believe you.
After you were told by Gus he wouldn't do it.
But in fairness, I thought it was quite surprising that he went to that so quickly. I mean, I know he'll have been thinking about it for a few days, but I thought it was quite a bold move from a manager who recently has been getting called
quite negative. In
hindsight,
I guess it's obvious he was always going to do that, because that's the one formation change he did make last season.
Yeah.
But it's kind of... I think when he tells you one thing, you know, stupidly, you probably believe him, and he was just throwing everybody off track, I guess, wasn't he?
I think one of the problems with it is when you're playing three centre-halves, you probably like to have one who's got a bit of pace about him.
Yeah, that would be my issue.
And we currently don't have that. That was why I said eventually I'd like to see us do it. But I was thinking probably after the summer if they can get someone in there. But to be honest, actually, I thought, and obviously they conceded within, 3 minutes, but it was sort of a set piece, you know, it was poor clearance by Virginie, but they got a lot of luck with it, and I thought we actually handled it quite well that first half. I thought Spurs kind of got a half time, and I think Pochettino must have turned around and said, right, well, we haven't expected this. We don't know how to deal with them here. And I think second half it wasn't so much a case of what we've been accused of lately of kind of sitting. It was just we were playing a Spurs side who, let's be honest, they are a good side, and they pinned us back. But as we were saying before, they didn't really cause a vast deal of problems, and the goal, as Chris was saying, the goal came and we were pushing up. You know, it was quite a positive move from Poirier for me, and I don't think you can criticise a manager this week.
Two ways of looking at three at the back, Chris. One is it's a formation that
Which
gets
Chris?
You, Chris Young, yeah, sorry, that gets you higher up the field, gets you to push out, which, as Chris Weatherspoon has just said, lack of pace will be concerning for that. When you saw Liverpool, for example, at the stadium, like their three centre-half split got high up the pitch. Another one would be you can play deep, and the idea is the third centre-half can cover one of the other two. Which was it?
The former. Yeah. Very much split the centre-halves. I thought it worked really well, and I think it probably suits the personnel that they've got, arguably more than a 4-1-4-1. Certainly Van Aanholt is probably more of a wing back than a full back.
Yeah.
Going forward, it's by far his strength rather than his defending.
It'll be very problematic if we get an injury situation with the two.
Yeah, I don't think you could play it with anyone other than Van Aanholt and Jones. You certainly couldn't play it with Virginie, and I'm not sure whether you could play it with Rivieri, or I don't know if he's got the legs anymore at 35. But those two, they're ideal for it. And as Chris alluded to, it was an attacking setup from Poirier, particularly with Johnson as one of the midfield three. Johnson really picked out some holes, particularly in the first half, and he had two people to aim for.
To be honest, picking up at that point, one of the most promising things I thought that came out was actually how Adam Johnson played. I thought he looked excellent.
He was. He looked a threat. I think he has done for the last month. Yeah, to be honest,
he's been good for a while, hasn't he, Johnson?
But even before the sign of Defoe, which we'll get onto later, we've been saying on here for a while that we wouldn't mind Gus moving things around so Adam Johnson could come inside. We've all been saying that. The lack of creativity from the middle of the park. Well, he's the obvious choice, isn't he? Yeah.
I think the thing.
I was expecting some analysis from Gareth, and he just said, "Yeah."
I think the thing with Johnson though is you saw with that first effort Graham had, that came from Johnson picking the ball up in the middle, and there was nothing else on his mind other than I'm going to hit this. And you need someone like that at times. I think a lot of the time our central midfielders are kind of shy of doing that. And to be honest, at the start of the season, I thought it would be the likes of Jacarini who'd kind of play in that role. But you watch him, and although he has good games, it's often when teams are tiring. He's not the sort who kind of grasps the whole of a game. Whereas, Johnson, I think he used to get a bit of a bum deal, really, from some people, myself included. But I think over the last year or so, he used to abuse Johnson.
Some people.
Some people mean themselves.
These people. Yeah. Sorry, I was just having a game of footy with Chris Young under the table there by accident. So.
From Gus Poyet on the new system now.
You know, this system is made a lot by the fullbacks, by the wingbacks, and that's something that we need to work because it's a different position and they need to adapt, Billy and Pat and Patrick. But like I said, 3 days, no? We're just starting. It's a new way of playing, but I'm sure that, looking at the first half, we're going to get better and better. Well, I got no doubt. I think we got players to play in a certain way, and depending on who you play against and where you are, I think you can be a little bit more offensive or a little bit more defensive. So it's a great option for us. Just we need to make sure that when we create the chances, you put the ball at the back of the net.
Chris Young, Gus, we speak a lot about how Gus wears his heart on his sleeve, and after a defeat, you're normally on the floor with him, I think is a term Gareth used, but he seems quite... He seemed quite buoyant still after that.
Yeah, I think when you compare it to the Liverpool game 7 days earlier, there were
the Tottenham game last season.
Yeah, the Tottenham game last season. There were plenty of positives for him to take out of it. I think the fact that Sunderland created three really really good chances in addition to the free kick and had a decent penalty appeal turned down as well. When you consider the problems they've had creating over recent games, that was a big upturn and. You can't get away from looking at Defoe that finally, probably for the first time since Darren Bent left, they've had someone making runs in behind a defence. Admittedly, he was caught offside 4 times during the first half, but he isn't going to get caught offside all the time. You need someone lingering on the shoulder of the last defender and looking for that ball in behind.
Two important positions, Gareth, that Gus has in his old system. Seem redundant in this new one. The first one's a deep line centre midfielder. I'm assuming nobody sat that deep. Was it a flat three?
No, he sort of played Larson and Rodwell together with Johnson
ahead. So he went the other way.
A bit like he did at Liverpool, where you had Jacarini in front. I can't remember.
So that's totally redundant now. Where Catamol and Brid could screen, then you wouldn't have that in 3-5-2.
No, but Catamol could play in that central two.
So, but I'm just saying. That position is
depends on the game, though, doesn't it?
He might. Do that, mightn't he? Might change it, but
you're not going to have three centre halves, and then that
not at home when you're playing someone like Burnley, are you? But maybe if you go to Chelsea, you'll have a protective in front of.
He's going to persist with that system for the foreseeable because he's got to stick with it to get it working.
Definitely,
he can't change it again so soon. You know, he's going to have to persist with this one for 4 or 5 games, no matter who the opposition is. Like, if this is the kind of game, maybe revert to something slightly different. The Tottenham game was. If he'd been playing the 3-5-2 for a while and he felt confident he'd go back to something else, because he's got to get it into them, then he had to play the Tottenham, I guess. So, yeah, I think they did all right generally. But Tottenham have got some, like Chadley, who was dreadful last season. He's been excellent this season. Eriksen, who's an excellent player, and he's the main man for them really. And he made some great movements and stuff around the pitch, so it's difficult to pick players like that up. And I think they just in the end gave the ball away one too many times. I think that was a disappointing thing. The ball retention when they had it wasn't great.
Particularly in the second half.
Yeah, and you know that was the issue when it was going up to the second striker. Not exactly long balls, but when it was going into, when I say second striker, I mean not Jermaine Defoe.
Did the three midfielders seem to take to the new setup?
They looked
okay?
Comfortable, weren't they?
Yeah, what, I thought Rodwell actually had one of his better games.
First
so
half,
far.
he was very good. Yeah,
I thought he was pretty much everywhere he needed to be defensively, and I thought he passed the ball well. And I mean, you know, it was a bit different second half because we didn't see as much of the ball. But I actually thought Rodwell kind of. I still don't know exactly where or how he wants to play him, but I think if he's going to get rid of that kind of deep lying role, and Rodwell's going to be like the next one forward, I think that could work.
It's replaced for Liam Bridcut in this system because he was bought specifically for that role, wasn't he? The deep lying midfielder.
Well, as I say, I mean, it depends on the nature of the opposition. It depends where you're going. You might need a deep lying midfielder for some games. But I think primarily, if you're going to play those three in the middle of the park, you need someone linking in behind the two strikers, particularly if you're playing two wing-backs. You're not playing two wingers who are going to be banging crosses in.
As you say, Johnson's the obvious choice, and Chris Weatherspoon touched on it earlier. Jaccarini's another name.
Alvarez, maybe?
Yeah, because Jaccarini, obviously, we spoke before, haven't we, about when Kevin Ball played. It was like a 4-3-3, wasn't it? But where Poyet likes the deep-line midfielder, Bawley likes the number 10 ahead of the two midfielders in a similar way, and that was Jaccarini, and he played very well.
Yeah, I think
that's his best position.
Yeah. I think Alvarez is now redundant. I don't see where, because he's unless he's going to play in the hole, he's going to come on as a sub. I mean, as a starter, he's a bit redundant now. I mean, he's not going to play as a wing back, is he? And he's not going to play
a
central midfielder. So I mean, if you went to the Christmas tree shape, you've got two options in behind this one striker.
Gareth's desperate for this.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying that's how you'd have to incorporate them. You'd have to have two attacking players in behind a forward. And there might be some games where that'll work. If you've got, you know, two midfielders drifting around, you're picking up spaces and trying to play, like you're saying, Defoe getting in behind off the shoulder. And Alvarez's passing is better than Jaccarini, I would say. In those areas, so he might be able to get him in. So as a substitute, maybe, or in that system, but you can't really see him. He's probably third in line to start in that system, isn't he? Really,
they cut them all. Chris fit in this okay?
I think so. I think probably Poyet's making a bit more light of his injury than what we've cottoned on to. But, I mean, he still hasn't returned to training.
Okay,
and we're like 3 weeks after he's. Two or three weeks since he's done the injury,
and of course, as well, the more you get on with the new system, the more he's going to want stability and to keep the same players and consistency.
And you think Catamol, he always takes a while to get up to. He needs to be up to speed before he really starts to make an impact. So
three guys in there in the middle.
I don't think you need to be in a rush to get
their place to lose.
I think so. Yeah, I think Rodwell certainly did enough to keep his place.
At the moment, if Catamol was back, though, you'd probably take Rodwell out, I think. But
Chris Young's just said there, if he's not back now, so now we go on the Fulham game and it's the same three, can you see him changing for an important game like Burnley? There's both sides of the coin, isn't there? Where you think Catamol's his guy, he wants him in for a game like that, but also you think this is a new system, these three players know their roles now.
They need to have as much understanding as possible now, as we were saying
that's
beforehand.
That's an interesting one. Interesting one.
I think he's got to play as strong a team as possible against Fulham. I think you can make a case for keeping an unchanged team just so they can carry on building that understanding.
I think he has to do that, absolutely, yeah.
I might be tempted to make a change up front. And it would be grim.
Yeah. To be honest, I was going to say the same.
I don't see why.
Very mixed reaction to that to that comment in the studio, I have to say.
You know, next week, I think you can afford to do that in that position. I agree about the back three. Keep them together because you want them to build something. But Defoe's always going to be that live wire and someone. It's finding the person who understands how to play off him. Wickham, I know they only had a short time to do it, but he's got another game where he can have a look at another player to play with him. If he's in his long term, well, if he's not going to leave in January, he has to look to use him. Especially if you're playing two up front, because you've got four players filling two positions, so. And you're going to pick up injuries and stuff. So if you want to keep that system, you can't go into that with three players to play up front. You've got to have four as options. So I would say that you've got to have a look at him, and you'd probably rather have a look at him in the cup game than in the league game, wouldn't you? But I think he's got to take a look.
On the flip side of the coin, though, you want to build a partnership between those front two. and so yeah, so you do, so yeah. you want as many minutes together as possible.
Was that encouragement from the partnership of the weekend at all? I know Fletcher missed a sitter.
To be fair,
I think I don't. I mean, I thought Fletcher's execution was poor, but I think you could see them dovetailing and things like that.
I thought he, when he was dropping off, I thought he did all right. Actually, I mean, I know that what you were saying before, Chris, about that excellent ball by Larson, and it's stuff like that where you kind of got your head in your hand and thinking, you know, you do the hard things and you don't do that. But I actually thought first half, particularly, I thought Fletcher dropped off quite well, and I actually thought like him and Johnson had some neat link up stuff. I know he missed a sitter, and you know, you would expect
generally
him to score.
Not very good. But
you're still going to, if one of the, if Fletcher or Graham's going through one on one, you're still going to put your money on Fletcher rather than Graham, aren't you?
Yeah,
probably at the moment. But how often do players go through one on one?
We seem to have this conversation every 6 months or so. Where we wonder whether Danny Graham's like.
I'm not saying. It's not even about that. It's just about the fact that if he's going to play two up front, he's going to need four strikers. Danny Graham's one of those strikers, and he's going to have to play. He's going to have a proper look at him, and whether he does that in training or he does that in a game. But do you want
coming on and like giving the defender something different to worry about? Because if you're looking at two players, I just think to follow the movement, don't
I? Yeah, I think maybe you can look too long term into these things. You've got to look at the short term. That Burnley game,
we need points.
A week on Saturday, huge. Sunderland need to win that game. You need to have the team as cohesive as possible for that one.
I take that point, but at the same time, can you hang your hat on Fletcher? Can you hang your hat on Wickham? I don't think you can.
You can't on Graham though either. No. So, to be fair,
you can't. But I'd argue that he hasn't really had, you know, as big a chance as some of the others to get it right.
You know, when people talk about the kid, give the kids a go and stuff, and we always say you can gauge it on the fact that they aren't getting loaned by Championship clubs, top end Championship clubs and stuff. There must be a reason managers don't pick them. And Graham is the same, surely, because he's going to Championship clubs and he's not playing.
Not making an impact at Wolves.
The thing is, though, with Graham, I mean, I don't know what goes on behind the scenes in training. I don't know what his attitude's like. But I've often been of the view over the last year and a half or so that he hasn't really been given a fair crack of the whip in comparison to, let's say, Altidore, who played 30 games last
season.
I'd
agree with that, but look at his goals for Hull.
Oh yeah,
Middlesbrough.
He got sent back in early, and Wolves. He didn't do anything in the centre back as well, didn't they?
I agree.
Managers see these players every day in training. This is what you've always got to remember.
It does seem like there's kind of, I don't know whether it's like overlap from, you know, the season he got signed when he didn't score. I don't know whether there's like an underlying feeling that it's just not going to work from here. But to be honest, in the last two games, I think he's quite lively.
Yeah, I think he's done all right coming off of the last two games.
Is that just more encouraging in the sense that you can rely on him to come on as a sub and make an impact then, rather than, you know, play from the start?
I mean, the thing about it is, though, that you look at the games where he played under Di Canio, basically, and under O'Neill, he never really. I mean, there was a couple of chances. I think he had one against Norwich, which he should have scored. I think there was one against
Everton. His debut, he came on a regular. Two headers.
But I wouldn't say they were like chances.
They just got on the end of the cross.
What I would say is that what was quite encouraging about Graham, and I guess you could say, I guess Fletcher got in round the back and missed that chance. You know, he got into areas. He got into dangerous positions, and the turning shot on the edge of the box at the end was pretty good. I mean, he hit it cleanly and keep made a decent save. He could have gone in the corner, then he scored, but that's an instinctive. He's made a good move off the shoulder of the defender, got into space, and he struck it, and keep made the save. That's all you can ask, really. I thought, you know, I'm not saying that he's the answer or the savior. I'm just saying, and I take your point that short term, you're right, that maybe they do need to work on that partnership short term, but you know, one of them gets injured or whatever, and you know, your options have depleted. I mean, he came on at the weekend, so he's been used twice in the Premier League in the last few weeks, so he's an option.
On the flip side of the coin though, Gareth, if one of the others gets injured, say Van Aanholt gets injured, then you probably have to tear up the system and go back to 4-1-4-1 as well. So you can't predict what's going to
happen, can you? No, you can't.
Would you put Chris Young, would you put Danny Graham ahead of Conor Wickham in the pecking order now or not?
No.
No?
I need to see more from Wickham, like.
I think he's been poor last two games, very poor, Wickham.
If I get like a little vote on that, Gareth, I'm sensing you put Graham ahead.
I'm saying they're probably neck and neck at the moment.
So if you had to make a decision, come on, don't sit there.
If I had to make a decision at the moment, I'd probably, on the basis of what I've seen in the last few weeks on form, I'd call him back before I'd call Wickham back.
Interesting that, Chris Witherspoon.
Put me on the spot here.
Put everybody on the
spot. I think what a lot of people forget about Wickham is he is still only 21 years old.
Hmm.
You know, and he's come here, he's been here, three and a half years now. He's always had this expectation on his shoulders, and obviously very grateful that he hit that purple patch at the end of last season, but that probably hasn't helped him in the sense of what people expect from him. And that was very much out of step with everything else he'd done in his Sunderland career so far. And I think, you know, he needs to grow. And how do you do it? You wouldn't send them back out on loan to a Championship side, especially after he's just signed a new contract. But I am wary that if you chuck him in expecting to do things, it might like hinder his own development.
I just wonder whether he needs a breather. I mean, yeah. I think he's been poor probably in the games we've seen so far in 2015, but up until the turn of the year, I don't think many of us would have been saying that he shouldn't have been in the starting 11.
He was okay. I mean, he was playing from that left hand side.
I just wonder whether. Well, I mean, he hasn't played a whole Premier League season. Let's forget ever before. So maybe he just needs a breather.
But I do want to get an actual answer from Chris Witherspoon, because that was a politician's answer.
It would just be nice if he looked, you know, a bit bothered when he came on.
Some people have that way, though, don't they?
Yeah.
Well, it doesn't help if you've got that way and then the ball comes in, you stop it, and you turn and you pass it out wide, you full back or whatever, your wing back in this case, or knock it back the centre half. That's one thing. When the ball comes up to you and you touch it and then you collapse like a pack of cards and then you've lost possession of the ball every time and you don't look bothered, that's when you got a problem, because people would judge you on that.
Chris, I want an answer from you on the Graham or Wickham.
Based on what I've just said, I would have Graham as the backup for now.
That's surprising.
Well, one of the things I've often
just based off two like short cameos
well,
from
no,
Graham.
No, actually, one of the things that why I was surprised that Graham never really got a look in at all last year was he played in what was a very technical Swansea side, you know. He's got a decent first touch and that. Yeah, he's not the most mobile, but when you consider the sort of football players being trying to get us to play, it's not exactly, you know, it's not exactly this kind of frenetic thing. Up top, especially, one of the big problems has been the ball doesn't stick. So I did find it quite surprising last year that he didn't get a look in ahead of Mr. Alador. Mm. But, I've just said for the cup game I would have a think about giving him a go, but I do think as a whole you've got to look at Fletcher being the one that you line up alongside Defoe.
Interesting. Well, we're going to hear from Gus Poyet on Jermaine Defoe now, and then we'll speak about him.
Took me a while not to make a decision. At the end of the day, the only way to get the match fit is playing football games, so I couldn't just leave him out and think maybe we can give him 30 minutes here, maybe we can give him an hour next week. And he was happy to play, felt that he was sharp enough to play, so we played him. A little bit longer than I expected, but that was because of the game. So I think he's going to gain from this game, and I'm sure that next week is going to be another important game for him to get really match fit. If you get the penalty, he scored the penalty for sure, so it will be there. I mean, the main thing is we get used to him. We know where he's going to be. We try to find him. I've been told by the analyst that one of the offsides is by a hand or by a yard. Mamma mia, what a view. So he's going to be there. He's going to be in the limit. And the one is going to be one hand behind. He's going to be in a position to score. And when he takes, you know, when he gets those opportunities, he takes his chances. So I think we are okay. We didn't look as a team, and, you know, in the bottom six or eight. We look much better than that.
Chris Young, how would you evaluate Jermaine Defoe's performance?
Good. not outstanding. I think he's obviously still a bit rusty. But as I was saying earlier, I think he was making those runs that no Sunderland striker has made in the last 4 years, really.
Is it? I mean, it's something we all knew anyway, and Gus has said it as well, but watching him play, does it become more obvious that he needs a strike partner?
Yeah, he needs to play off someone, definitely. It's not his game to play with his back to goal. He needs to be running onto passes and being threaded in through on goal. That's his game. He likes getting the ball into his feet in or around the penalty area and getting a shot off. But I think there was more than sufficient indications down at Spurs that he will get goals.
How long, Gareth, before the fans get frustrated at his little runs and with the offside flag going up? Because we were
we were
warned about it. We spoke to somebody on the Light Show, the Tottenham fan Raj, and he said, you know, I hope you're ready for the amount of times you're going to be offside. But the way initially you view it is, it's not a bad thing because we now have a forward making these runs in the first place before we haven't had one. However, if it goes on and on and on and on, you know, fans are like they're gonna start getting.
Well, you can't have it. You know, you can't have it both ways. I mean, if he scores a few, then people maybe.
Oh, I'm comfortable with it.
I'm fine with it as well.
To be fair, Bent used to be offside a lot as well.
Yeah. That's part of the game. But the one
it's making the run, isn't it? Yeah. And then the odd time.
If he has two games, there's a chance that comes to him on Saturday, and I think he's got a 50-50 chance of scoring. And that was one I think was played in when it came on his left, and he tried to bring it back in on his right, and it got kind of crowded out. You know, another game or two, you see him getting it out of his left and just swinging at him. He strikes the ball so cleanly. I think you saw him get in down the right and he hit one on the volley and he had to block it, the defender and stuff like that. So, you know, that's where you imagine Jermaine Defoe scoring goals is when he's almost got his back to goal and he's wriggled away from someone and hit it from all different angles around the penalty area. And that's what he's good at. So, and we haven't got somebody like that, so we've definitely filled that gap, and the fact that he's changed his system to accommodate him says a lot.
It certainly
he's
does.
Single, he's single-minded, does. He's like Phillips, isn't he? Anytime he gets that ball in or around the penalty area, he wants to go for goal. He's not thinking about finding a teammate, and Sunderland have needed someone with that selfie streak.
As Gareth just said there as well, that's huge that Gus has changed. I wouldn't say he's changed his philosophy, but he's almost ripped it up and started again, hasn't he? That says a lot about Defoe. How highly he ranks?
Yeah, I mean, he obviously sees him as a key figure, and understandably so. He's played on this 4-1-4-1 system. He works on it throughout pre-season. I don't think there was any time in pre-season where he didn't play that formation, and he's kept it throughout this season. Even really when they've been struggling or chasing a goal, he's either used Altidore or Wickham out on the left or something rather than playing two up top. So it's a bold step, but probably a necessary step. The 4-1-4-1 wasn't getting them wins, was it?
Kind of exciting and terrifying in equal measure, Chris Weatherspoon.
One of the things that you can't really quantify, but that I thought was really promising about Defoe, was that their back four actually, you know, they looked worried about him. They were constant. You could see. Yeah. I mean, Vertonghen. I mean, I'm sorry.
That's why I take the offsides all day, because I mean, the defender needs to be on the toes.
He dragged Vertonghen everywhere with him. I mean,
he should have had a penalty.
I mean, yeah, that's a penalty. Vertonghen was the one who fouled him for the free kick.
Did you think it was a penalty, Chris? Because I'm sure.
I thought he was already going to ground when he made contact, but I'd say it was a clumsy challenge by Vertonghen, and I've seen them given.
Yeah, he blocked him.
Well, I would just say, I think probably the reason it didn't get given is that the referee looks and thinks, well, defenders are not really put a challenge in, you know. But I think the fact that Defoe was so clever for him that he turned him, that it wasn't really even Vertonghen's fault. I think Defoe was just quicker than him. I thought it was a penalty.
It was his fault because
that's what I mean. He blocked him up, but it was more like kind of the striker's cutting than the defender.
We've been waiting for someone to come alive in the box like that.
He blocked him off, and I think it's one. I don't know if the linesman was up that end for that.
No,
half.
He was at the opposite side.
That's a linesman's penalty, that one, because he's got the angle to see him blocked off. But interesting that Poyet there said he takes a penalty and scores, so we know that he's now the designated penalty taker. Yeah.
Was he?
Yeah. Well, we've seen him take the penalty even ahead. He'll be ahead.
He was the first. I don't know. I would imagine Defoe will change things, but yeah, Gomez was first choice penalty taker whenever he was on the field.
Yeah.
You know, these strikers often ask for that on the contracts, don't they? When he sign and make me, you know, I want the penalties. You wouldn't be surprised at all.
Well, you want that confidence. I mean, What I quite liked about Defoe...
Didn't like when Kevin Phillips had that confidence. Well, he was rubbish at penalties,
wasn't he? what I like about Defoe is... what I liked about when he signed... you know, you usually get the interview goes on the website and it's like, oh yeah, I'm really looking forward to playing for Sunderland. The fans are great. And I'm just going to do my best. And like it's like really like, oh, bland. And like Defoe is like, he's like, you know... The energy. He's moving in his seat and he's talking. He's not. He's saying stuff that you expect him to say, but.
Getting very psychoanalytical here.
It's the manner.
Body language analysis with Gareth Parker.
It's true, though. It's that energy that we need, that explosiveness. You know, you imagine he's going to be some sort of.
We need the explosiveness, you know, in the box, that's for sure.
Hound in the
And like you say, that turn, whether it was a penalty or not. You know, Fletcher's good in the box, but you don't feel like he's gonna come to life. If he's got bodies around him, you don't feel he's gonna come to life.
You would never expect him. I mean, Defoe, that was just instinct for him. You know, like it wasn't like he got the ball then tried to turn. It was just all that was on his mind was he was gonna turn and get himself in a goal scoring position. And in a way, you probably can't even teach that. You know, it's instinctive. And I think if you look at the statistics, and this is probably why they don't show everything, I think Defoe only like made something like 5 passes on Saturday, but it was what he did when he didn't have the ball. You know, like we were saying, he was running off Fletcher before when Fletcher should have played him in. He was dragging them around. You know, he was winning free kicks. I just think he obviously gives us something, but he gives other teams something to worry about. And I think for a lot of this season, that's been a bit of a problem for us. I mean, we've had strikers up front. And other teams are probably thinking, well, you know what, like, as long as they don't get an opportunity about 6 yards, 12 yards out, we'll be all right.
Get tight to Stephen Fletcher and that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean. Fletcher's not going to beat you for pace. He's not going to play on the shoulder kind of thing. And the problem with that was that if we didn't have anyone coming forward from midfield, we weren't going to do anything. Whereas now you've got Defoe, who's got a bit of pace, he can turn a man. You know, it gives you that kind of different like angle of attack. It gives you different options.
Word for Seb as well. 4th highest free kick goal scorer in the Premier League.
He's not even great at them anymore, is he?
Well, he's getting a bit
he's
better.
He's got 2 this season. Yeah, he has, yeah.
He's looking a bit more dangerous from
this season.
Our corners actually.
You wonder he's been back on the practice ground.
Our corners were brilliant on Saturday. Even Johnson, who usually basically, you might as well just put the ball out on the other side when he takes the corner because it always gets overhit and goes out of the back post. But his corners were good. Larson's corners were good. The delivery from set pieces was good, and then it's a textbook, you know, it's a textbook free kick from him. That's the image, the mental image you've got in your mind of a free kick in that position, and it was absolutely perfect. And so, you know, fair play to him for, you know, carrying on his good form even when we've been, you know, bad, and when we've been good, he's been consistently one of the most important performers. So, you know, let's hope he is one of the key men in creating the opportunities for the two front men.
How is your patience towards Virginie now?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Thought he did, well.
Because, again, I didn't watch the game. I just going off people's tweets and speaking to people, and he didn't impress generally. But I know you're a fan.
He let
somebody in. I can't remember who it was.
Soldado.
Yeah.
And he didn't step up, and then... but to be fair, he's playing with two centre halves who've played together for the best part of their career, who probably know each other inside out. And then you've got, you know, the clearance was bad, but you see brilliant defenders do that. Vidic did it at the stadium against us last year when Gardner scored, I remember.
I didn't see the game. I'm just as I expected. I'm sensing
it was a long goal as well.
A lot more patience from you than other.
Is the thing with
Virginie
that possibly rubs people up the wrong way is that possibly he's, I know what we're saying about Wickham not looking bothered, you kind of Virginie very much like when he scored that on goal down at Southampton, it was just a kind of shrug of the shoulders then run off and get the ball kind of thing. He very much seems to take everything in his stride, and I don't think it is, but some people might mistake that for kind of, you know, being lackadaisical, like not
I think
like being disinterested.
I
you
think
know?
Because he had such a bad start to his Sunderland career in general.
But he won people around this season
early on. But I think people don't forget that. Though.
Performances of late seem to be tailing off somewhat.
Like if you start well, it buys you a lot of time, like in the future, because you can go back and say, well, yeah, but he did this, so they can do, they are capable. When you get off to a bad start, people, well, you know, anybody who's playing well he's had his spell and he's as rubbish as he was when he first started. So
you do also have to ask whether
I thought he'd be picked up a bit of a cult status the first quarter of the season, and then it's just been the last few games. But I know he's been playing right back a lot, which doesn't help. But well, of course, he was centre half.
You have to ask as well: is he being helped by his manager? Because Poirier himself admitted he's been carrying a knock, and he's not being 100%. And then last weekend against Liverpool, when you thought it was prime time for Billy Jones to come in, you know, you pick Virginia again, and you kind of, and you know, yeah, probably Poirier does like Virginia, but is he doing him any favours there, you know?
Jones hadn't trained, though, we found this out. So Jones hadn't trained, had he?
No, for the Liverpool game. He hadn't trained, so he decided he wasn't quite fit.
I think Virginia's a bit, as I said before, I think he's a bit like Wickham. I think he's probably needed a rest. I think it's probably as simple as that.
Now
he's not going to get it.
Not going to get it because they want to do three. I mean, if they're going to...
Well, Quattes could play.
But he's not going to drop. Would you drop Virginia for Quattes?
Well, if he's knackered, then you need
him. Well, I don't think I'd drop a knackered Virginia for Quattes.
There's no point in having Quattes either, Chris.
Well,
he's not going to
play. I think that's the most intelligent thing you've said.
Not a fan, Gareth?
Well, he just looks crap, doesn't he? Let's be honest.
Yeah, no, but did Virginia not look crap the weekend? People have spoken. I didn't watch the game.
I thought Virginia was a lot better in the second half,
yeah,
to be fair.
Yeah,
I didn't think Virginia was, like, notably awful, to be honest. You know, you got to remember.
I think a couple of journalists who I was sitting next to who don't obviously see Sunderland regularly, they immediately picked up on Virginia in the first half. I thought the second half he did fine.
I mean, his error was quite glaring, wasn't it? He was the one. But then you say, like, well, should somebody not stop the shot? Like,
yeah, I think he made a couple of mistakes in that first half. I think he looked a bit nervy, but maybe that was just acclimatising to the system.
Were they national journalists?
They were.
Were they? Yeah. They like, the thing is with nationals, I tend to find they often like to pick on people. They like to pick somebody out and then make them into this comedy character and use them for their, like, you know, for jokes and stuff. See Nicholas Bentner as a great example of that. And, you know, I wouldn't really, you know, somebody
very
used
cynical
to,
of you.
Well,
no, to be fair, I thought I think Virginia did struggle in that first half. I thought second half though he's fine. I think maybe if he could get a rest at some stage, it'll probably help him.
Yeah, definitely would, but he's not going to get it.
as you alluded to, he's not going to get it.
But if the system works and they start picking up wins, not just draws, then you'll not want to drop out.
No.
You want to keep playing.
No.
And you start winning games, and you suddenly, I feel quite good. Not tired anymore. You're tired when you're getting beaten. When you're winning, you're not, are you?
Finally then, the keeper. Good game.
Excellent game.
Yeah.
Excellent game. I mean,
Costy pants,
yeah.
Good new song for him as well.
I heard about it.
I'm not, no. I was hoping you had some audio.
So it reminds us of that... there was this thing, like a viral video going around somebody...
On Facebook?
No, it wasn't, like just your Facebooks of this world. It was your Twitters as well. Somebody doing this, like, He-Man mashup with, like, a daft version of the song over the top of it, and it's very funny. So if you search for that, I think it's just called Hey. Or something like that.
Good little anecdote, that one.
we'll leave the banter to people like Jermaine Defoe, people like that, and I'll just stick to me
on the
draw. Well, you know, yes it is, Chris.
On that note, we should call it a night.
Yeah, just keep going.
Anything we need to say, make people aware of? Chris Young confirmed before that the guys are going to come in
Chris Young's confirmed on their behalf.
The Sunderland Echo, when they decided the top
Chris Young signed
top 100
the,
transfers
signed
post
the deal.
War
that deal's done. It's on the yellow ticker. If you go on now, that deal's done.
Sky Sources
over the line. Sky Sources understand that the
Sky Sources are the Echo quite often.
Still
in negotiations for the other three. So Anderson obviously's got a lot of options now. He's freelance, so he's going to be the one who's difficult to get over the line, as the cliche goes. But yeah, so that'll be quite good, probably.
Yeah, let's keep an eye out for that. All right, like to thank my guests, the two Chris's, for coming on, and Gareth. being a bounder, being a bounder hound there.
Yeah. I saw that used, and I've started to use it more, and I want to get it into the lexicon because it sounds really awful. It's like a horrible, just compound sort of horrible thing to say, a banter hound.
Already now? People probably switched off.
Nah, I don't care. Let's drag it on for a bit longer.
No. Okay. Thanks for listening. Over and out.